This is Jim Inkster. Today on Talk Louisiana, we will visit with Times-Picayune and NOLA.com reporter Julia O'Donohue. She'll comment on the pattern of sexual misconduct from former high-ranking state official Johnny Anderson, who worked at high levels of government for both the administrations of Governor Kathleen Blanco and Governor John Bel Edwards. And Anderson has been contacted but has not responded. We'll talk with Julia O'Donohue about a couple of stories with unseemly revelations that she produced in the last few days. Former Advocate columnist and NPR commentator Ed Cullen is here to comment on his latest work with the Farmer's Almanac, and Ed Cullen will also give his take on the state of journalism in America. Now the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Your number is 877-217-5757. Tropical Storm Gordon has moved quickly across the eastern Gulf of Mexico, wind strength increasing to more than 60 miles per hour, according to the National Hurricane Center. It's expected to make landfall as a hurricane sometime tonight. Gordon right now is located about 330 miles east-southeast of the mouth of the Mississippi River. Heavy rainfall will affect southern Alabama, southern Mississippi, and, of course, southern Louisiana, with totals that could reach as high as 8 inches in some areas. So we will keep you posted throughout the day and night right here on WRKF. And a program note, tomorrow we are slated to be preempted by the hearing for Judge Brett Kavanaugh, who's vying to become a Supreme Court justice, as the Judiciary Committee begins its hearings today, which will begin right after this show. We will join the hearings of the committee at 10 o'clock, and then tomorrow the questions from committee members should be quite interesting. 877-217-5757 and 297-5633, and the email is talk@talklouisiana.org. And we're joined by Julia O'Donohue. For the last 5 years, she has done exceptional work for the Times-Picayune and NOLA.com. She covers state government, and there is a story that has been simmering for some time about Johnny Anderson, former top aide to both Governor Kathleen Blanco and Governor John Bel Edwards. He lost two jobs in administrations for sexual harassment allegations. And Julia O'Donohue, in a couple of exceptional pieces over the last few days, has unearthed some of the details, including interviews with some of the victims of Johnny Anderson, who we have contacted but have not heard from. But if he would like to appear on this show at any time to discuss this, we welcome his input. And Julia O'Donohue, this is the kind of story that people buzz about, but nonetheless, it doesn't make you feel very good about humanity, I would think.
No, I think sexual harassment allegations don't make people feel particularly good about humanity. So, yeah, I guess I would agree.
Well, the story's been around for some time, and he was fired several months ago, but you actually have the ingredients of the particulars of a settlement that was reached with one of the victims, and the state has paid some money as a result of the alleged misdeeds of Johnny Anderson.
Yeah, so he actually wasn't fired. He resigned. I think whether he was forced to resign, I think there's some indication he was, but he wasn't fired. He resigned, and initially he said he went of his own accord. I believe it was March. It might have been April. The state paid out a settlement to Juanita Washington, who has agreed to be identified publicly, a woman who worked in the executive branch of government in the governor's office, who had accused Johnny Anderson of sexual harassment. Mr. Anderson was the deputy chief of staff for programs and planning, which meant he oversaw a lot of women's issues, and also the Louisiana Commission on Human Rights, which is the equivalent of the EEOC for the state. So the place where people take their sexual harassment or racial discrimination complaints that they might have against their employer. She was paid about $51,000. The total figure spent settling these allegations against Mr. Anderson was around $108,000, because her lawyer, her attorney, and the governor's office had to hire an attorney to handle this. So they also needed to be paid.
All right. Her attorney was Jill Kraft, who's been involved in several cases, including the one recently involving allegations against Tom Shedler, the former Secretary of State. 877-217-5757 is your number for Julia O'Donohue. It's a tough topic, and as I stated, you cover all kinds of matters at the Capitol, and this is one that, and when you get into the particulars, as you say, sexual harassment is never something that's fun to write about or interview people about, but Juanita Washington was quite forthcoming in what she said happened to her.
Yes, I guess we should say up front that that Mr. Anderson and the governor's office, despite the settlement, have not admitted to doing anything wrong. Ms. Washington says that while she was working for Mr. Anderson, he touched her a lot in private meetings. He sent her sexual text messages, many of which I've seen. And then in the interview before she got the job, that he asked for oral sex, which she says she was coerced into giving. Those were details that we didn't know when the settlement was struck back in the spring. Juanita had not spoken publicly about them. And in fact, in the settlement, it sort of says that she's not supposed to make, I think the phrase is, disparaging remarks about either the governor's office or Mr. Anderson. So the fact that she spoke about them at all might have come as a surprise to some people. But again, these are allegations. Mr. Anderson and the governor's office haven't said that they actually happened. Nevertheless, there's a lot of text messages that show that they were having conversations about sex for, close to a year and a half while she was working for Mr. Anderson. And then she has alleged that he coerced her into basically resigning from her job before he left and before she brought her accusations to a lawyer. She had signed a resignation letter that she says he made her sign by lying to her about the fact that she might be on the chopping block or fired. So they're pretty serious allegations that she's making.
And Julia, you certainly have another alleged victim that came forward, and we'll talk about that. But a listener asks about the previous issues that Johnny Anderson had while working for Governor Blanco, and asks, how in the world could he have been hired again after basically being accused of the same thing when he was at Southern University, I believe.
Well, I think a lot of people have the question that the listener's having. I mean, in fairness, Mr. Anderson was never fired or even forced to resign when a number of people came forward People came forward at Southern in 2005, 2006, when Mr. Anderson was the head of the Southern board and worked for Governor Blanco, and said that they knew he had been sexually harassing or making many women at Southern uncomfortable. There were a couple investigations into that, one internally done by Southern and one done by an independent lawyer that was hired by Governor Blanco to look into it. And over the course of those investigations, the women who were allegedly harassed, most of them would not participate. And the men who had sort of gone public with these allegations against Mr. Anderson, they said on behalf of these women, wouldn't participate either. They said they didn't feel comfortable that Mr. Anderson wouldn't know what was happening and who was making the allegations. And so the investigations didn't really go anywhere. And at the end of the day, Governor Blanco kept Mr. Anderson on her staff. He briefly kind of was not the chairman of the Southern board, you know, stepped down while this was happening, but he didn't leave the board as a result of this. So I think, you know, in some people, and he started to tell people that he had been exonerated, which is not a word I would have used. I would have said that they kind of didn't get very far in the investigation because people wouldn't cooperate with them. So I think that there are questions about why he was hired again, but in fairness, he was not really reprimanded at the time. I think other people have questions about why, if you were going to hire him, maybe why you put him over a state agent or a state commission that reviews sexual harassment allegations.
All right. We are going to spend some more time with Julia O'Donohue, the reporter for Times-Picayune and NOLA.com, after this pause. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, and we're spending a bit more time with Julia O'Donohue, reporter for the Times-Picayune and NOLA.com. She has written two stories of late about the allegations of sexual misconduct against former Deputy Chief of Staff Johnny Anderson for Governor John Bel Edwards. The copy of the settlement says Anderson expressly denies any liability or wrongdoing of any kind and maintains there is no evidence that Louisiana sexual harassment laws or any other applicable laws have been violated, but Johnny Anderson did resign, apparently under pressure, when these stories were revealed internally. And now Julia O'Donohue, through her intrepid reporting, has a couple of the alleged victims who have come forward. And I'm told by our producer, Matt Doyle, that Juanita Washington, one of the alleged victims, is on the line and will join us in just a moment. But Julia O'Donohue, what about the other person you interviewed, Dylan Wagusback? We did contact him as well, and he declined to appear on the show, but said he was appreciative of the fact that we were talking about it. But Dylan Wagusback, a lobbyist, also alleges that Johnny Anderson was doing some things that were not particularly pleasant to Mr. Wagusback, who I understand is involved in the transgender movement. But can you tell us about Dylan Wagusback?
Yeah, Dylan Wagusback is a very young lobbyist. I actually don't know quite how old he is, but he's, you know, probably somewhere like 25, 26, 27. He has been involved in left-leaning causes for a while. He worked for the Louisiana Budget Project, which advocates on behalf of public policy that's good for low-income folks. He worked on the criminal justice overhaul quite a bit. He I think continues to work on that. So he was part of that broader coalition. And he also worked on Mayor Sharon Weston Broome's transition. And he said when he was on Mayor Broome's transition, shortly thereafter, Mr. Anderson, who was also on the transition, started sending him sexually suggestive text messages, and that when Dylan would run into Mr. Anderson in the Capitol, that inevitably later that day he would get a sexually suggestive message. And he said he tried in polite ways to sort of indicate he didn't want that type of attention and that Mr. Anderson didn't seem to get the message, at least not for several months. That's a bit different because that is not someone who worked directly for Mr. Anderson, but I think that Dylan would say that it was a difficult situation because Mr. Anderson is an important person, particularly in Democratic politics, and Dylan is a pretty young person, lobbyist just starting out. So he kind of felt like it was difficult to figure out what, you know, how to respond and whatnot.
And Johnny Anderson and his attorney, Carl Bernard, they have denied this vigorously and are even talking about some kind of suit against Mr. Waguespack, I believe.
Yeah, they've, when I've talked to them about both Ms. Washington and Mr. Waguespack, they've threatened legal action. We'll see if that actually comes to pass. I will say I saw text messages between, or Facebook messages rather, between that seemed to come from Mr. Anderson's account and Dylan. I some of their objection seems to be that they don't think that this is qualifies as sexual harassment, because Dylan didn't work for him directly. Whether Dylan could pursue a civil lawsuit, I think, is one issue. But another issue is just, is this the way someone should be interacting with a lobbyist if they work for the governor, you know?
All right. Juanita Washington, as stated, is with us, and she is one of the people who came forward and talked with Julia O'Donohue, and Julia gave the particulars of a settlement that Juanita received for alleged sexual harassment from her boss, Johnny Anderson. And Juanita, it is good to have you join the program. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Well, we don't have all day, obviously, but how did you become a member of Mr. Anderson and the administration staff?
When I relocated back from Louisiana to Louisiana, it was very important that I actually, you know, found a job so I can take care of my family at the time. I had pretty much sacrificed everything that I had and moved back. My dad was not at the time, so I was also preparing to take care of my mother after that death. I was eating at Christina's restaurant, and I was speaking to a friend of mine about the new administration and job opportunities, and Mr. Anderson happened to walk into Christina's at the time we was having the conversation. And that conversation pretty much led to an employment opportunity with Mr. Anderson. Mr. Anderson asked me, could I meet him at the transition office, which is what I ended up doing. I want to say it was later that day. And that conversation seemed to be a bit normal, except for it was a little touching. I got to learn, you know, the history of what had happened to his family. And I also shared some very, very things about what was going on with my family and also what had happened of my daughter, who's 13 now, what had happened to her father. He had died in the line of duty in Alexander, Louisiana. He's a police officer. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much how it actually got started.
So you were hired in what capacity, Juanita?
Well, I was hired as the SICC, which is the State Interagency Coordinated Council, for the Office of the Governor. And that is a position where I was overseeing the actual board for a program called Early Steps in collaboration with the Department of Health and Hospital.
And when did the alleged harassment or misconduct from Mr. Anderson occur?
The misconduct almost began immediately on my second interview when I was asked to come to the governor's office for a meeting to pretty much choose what position that I wanted that was available. I was hoping to work for Department of Health and Hospital with all of my health and hospital background experience. But Mr. Anderson informed me that that wouldn't be a position where he would have direct control over. So he gave me a couple positions, and then Mr. Anderson spoke with me about a position that I needed to go and speak with the other person who was in the position, but she was transitioned out of it. So we spoke about what the position entailed. It was kind of different for me. I was used to working in the elderly population. And this was mostly working with kids from birth to three. So it did take some adjustment. But after Mr. Anderson and I decided, I called him back after I met with the actual person that was in the position. I told him that I would take the position. That's when he pretty much summoned me back to his office and began to tell me, you know, some of the things that I would need to do to secure the position, in other words.
These were sexual suggestions from him?
Absolutely, yes.
877-217-5757 is our number. It's a tough topic. We'll spend a few more minutes with Juanita Washington and also hear again from Julia O'Donohue, this reporter who broke this story for NOLA.com and the Times-Picayune. And we'll return with more of the conversation and also hear from the remarkable Ed Cullen after this brief pause on WRKF for the news. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Matt Doyle is producing. Just a bit, we'll hear from Ed Cullen, former NPR commentator and former columnist of note with The Advocate. Remember Attic Salt, which appeared every Sunday? Ed Cullen is in the house. But we're closing with Julia O'Donohue, who has a busy day following Tropical Storm Gordon, but she is the one who broke this story, and we're going to rejoin Juanita Washington as well. And Julia, before we leave you and let you get to your real job, is noted this story about sexual misconduct or alleged sexual misconduct from Johnny Anderson's not a pleasant one, but it needed to be told. And you have two stories with two alleged victims. And what do you think? Where do you think this is going? Is it basically over, or is this a story that will continue to permeate?
I don't know. I think there will probably be some questions about the governor's decision to hire Mr. Anderson during his reelection campaign. I know some opponents have already been raising the specter, or at least some people on the Republican side of the aisle. I think we'll see. I think, you know, certainly sexual harassment is a hot topic right now, deservedly so. We've kind of been in a year of this being a hot topic. So I think we'll see. I expect that it will come up in the campaign. I don't know that it's going to be a major talking point in the campaign. I don't know that we can say that yet, but I think it will probably come up during his reelection campaign.
All right. Thank you, Julia. Appreciate your good work and your time today. And Juanita Washington, as noted, one of the alleged victims who was interviewed by Julia, is with us for a few more moments. And she worked for Johnny Anderson and said that he summoned her to his office, and the alleged misconduct began. And you were in his employment, or you were working for him. And did you feel as though you had to do this to keep your job? Was that why you complied?
Absolutely. There were no way around it. You know, it was a very suffocating experience. And as Julie can tell you, that story wasn't easy. It was very hard. Mm-hmm. It took a lot of time. and it was very difficult. And I haven't even registered. It's actually hard to read even my own words or pretty much what happened. A lot of embarrassment kicked in, but being courageous is also going against the grain and doing something that absolutely allows other folks to stand up. And I was so excited when Dylan stood up, and there are a few other people have called me who are still trying to get to the point where I'm at, where I was able to stand up. So I don't think it's over, because there are people that inbox me and text me and are now telling me that they pretty much went through similar circumstances.
How long did this go on, Julia? Excuse me, Juanita.
A little over a year and a half, I would say, but it was very heavy the first year. And it was a time where it was very difficult for me. I was very, very vulnerable. And people that know me doesn't know that side. But what they do know is how I am when it comes to my mother and my father, my family, period. So it went on for, to me, it seems like eternity almost. Because in my mind, I'm still beating myself up over it.
Well, we thank you for joining us today. Do you have any parting thoughts, Juanita?
I just want to say to any young ladies, young men, you know, let my story do what it intended to do, is to give you an opportunity to come forward, say, you know, what you have to say. That's how the healing process begins. And I'm here if anyone needs to talk. We all know that when you have things that you empathize with, it's kind of easy to talk to that person about it. And I would like to leave this with, I don't feel like I'm a sexual harassment victim just of Johnny Anderson. I really left that state feeling like I'm a victim of the state of Louisiana. And to be more direct, I'm a victim of the actual governor's office itself. And that's where I would like to leave it at.
All right. And it should be noted that Johnny Anderson denies any impropriety. And as we have stated, if he is willing, we have contacted him. And at any time, if he wishes to refute or try to refute some of these allegations, we give him that opportunity. Thank you, Juanita. And thank you for participating in the show today. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And we're joined in studio now by Ed Cullen, who for many, many moons was a reporter for The Advocate and then a columnist. Every Sunday, Attic Salt was part of the day for many who read the so-called People section. And Danny Heitman's doing great work as the designated columnist now. And Ed Cullen left quite a legacy, and he continues to write. And by the way, belated happy birthday, Ed.
Thank you.
And your latest foray is with the Farmer's Almanac.
Yeah, Farmer's Almanac, and they asked me to be sure to say that the Farmer's Almanac we're talking about is the one with the orange and green colors on the cover. There are other Farmer's Almanacs, all of them quite old. They're in the Northeast.
Well, this one's since 1818. So
yeah.
That's 200 years, according
right.
to my math.
And there's another one that claims to be slightly older than that. But I grew up seeing the Farmer's Almanac. And I just thought it'd be neat to write for them. And I've had four stories published over the years in Farmer's Almanac. They're the one... They're the one with the hole punched in the corner. That's a 100-year tradition. Farmers used to drive nails through the corner so they could hang their farmers' almanacs in various places. And about 100 years ago, Farmers' Almanac decided to pre-punch the hole. They did it for a long time. It generates hundreds of thousands of chads, what we now call chads, the paper that gets punched out of the hole. And it was a problem getting rid of all these chads, so they thought they would stop punching the hole in the corner, and the readers let them know that they wanted the hole. So.
Okay. Well, your story in this one is about the Cajun Navy, which may be called into action like right now.
They're probably gassing up and loading their barbecue pits. And when I read for National Public Radio, it was always, not always, but often a problem explaining Louisiana to a national audience, especially South Louisiana, Mardi Gras. This mm-hmm. National Public Radio never really got it. They thought they had it, but they never did. Getting the editor in Lewiston, Maine, where the Farmer's Almanac is published, to understand the Cajun Navy was a challenge.
Well, you're quite a Renaissance man yourself. Ed, as we noted on this show, served with distinction during the Vietnam War. He's from Alexandria, so he's an outdoorsman as well. And these guys and girls with the Cajun Navy, they are exceptional people in their own way.
Yeah.
You took a liking to some of them, didn't you?
Yeah, I mean, one of them I got hold of after a day of duck hunting. He was at his blind, gorgeous day in the fall. And we talked by a cell phone. I interviewed him in the duck blind. Yeah, they're really interesting people. And Farmer's Almanac likes to, they pride themselves with not only telling you how to do something, but not telling you about something, but telling you how to do it. So this editor keeps saying, well, so how do you join the Cajun Navy? And I said, well, you could start by reading the story I sent you. But if you have a boat and a trailer and you're willing to go into flooded places, then you show up at the parking lot and you're off.
Now, you were in the United States Navy.
Right.
And there are some people who, believe it or not, who have taken offense, saying that, you know, it's not right to call someone who's not in the real Navy to be part of a Navy. You don't.
Yeah, well, you know,
you're not bothered by that.
I guess the people who started Cox's Army angered the real Army. No, but as I said in this story, in Louisiana, you know, we have colonels, and other parts of the country have colonels and distinguished people that they award the honorary title of colonel. Well, in Louisiana, because there's so much water, being named an admiral by the governor, and Cajun Navy is a term. It's an old term. It wasn't invented by the
current one.
By the flood, flood people.
Well, they're doing some good work, and Ed Cullen has reported about them with mm-hmm. Ernest in the Farmer's Almanac for the year 2019, and we'll talk with them about this and more. If you'd like to join the conversation for the man who spent, what, about 40 years at the Advocate?
41, but I wasn't counting the years.
877-217-5757. Back after this timeout on WRKF. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Matt Doyle's producing. 297-5633 in Baton Rouge, 877-217-5757. Anywhere else, Ed Cullen is with us. He was a columnist for The Advocate for many years, spent 41 years with the newspaper that dominated the Baton Rouge area and now dominates the entire state. And he also was a commentator for a couple of decades almost with National Public Radio. It all started with Porch Steps Baseball, and we've talked with him about how he sent in this tape, and then suddenly he's a regular contributor to All Things Considered. And I bet you never knew you did about 100 commentaries, didn't you? Close to
a little over 30.
Okay, all right. Well, I'm giving you a little. Maybe he did 100 and only 30
were. It seemed like 100.
They didn't take them all, did they?
Almost, because I wasn't, unlike Andre Codrescu, who had a regular gig, he was on, you know, come hell or high water. I had to clear, I had to run a gauntlet of editors, primarily Jonathan Smokey Bear, who was the engineer and sort of an editor. He was wonderful. And, oh, can't think of her name. But my primary editor was another I had to get stuff by.
And the first one you sent in was in real rudimentary fashion. You didn't have any high-tech equipment, did you?
No. I recorded it. It was way too long. I sent them to it in text. That's what you were supposed to do. And I sent it. It was the length of my column, which was about 1,500 words in The Advocate. And Darcy Bacon handled the first one. She was about to leave All Things Considered, but wasn't rope-a-doping. She was working to the last minute, and she liked it. It was about a boy throwing a tennis ball against the front porch steps and playing the carom. And she said, well, you obviously didn't read the instructions on how to do this. This thing is about five times too long. And I had to whittle it down to about 300 or 400 words, and then she taught me how to read without sounding like sing-song.
Conversational.
Yeah, exactly.
And you did it well.
Yeah, and then they lost it, and Darcy left, and that was about to be the end of my brilliant radio career. And Eric Deweese said, nah, they do this all the time. I kept a backup. By this time, we'd gotten to the point where I had shortened it. We sent them something. They liked it. They were going to run it. Then they lost it. And Deweese had a backup. And so we got on.
Well, that's wonderful. And Ed is not resting on his laurels. You retired how long?
About 5 years.
5 years ago. He's involved with various activities. We'll get to some of those, but I've noted you were born in the summer of 46, the same summer that produced three U.S. presidents, Bill Clinton, Donald Trump, George Bush. And unlike them, you actually went abroad and fought for our country during a war.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess George flew around, but he never got outside the continental United States.
No, he didn't. Yeah. But we heard Meghan McCain the other day talking about sunshine patriots and summer soldiers.
Right.
Did that hit close to home?
You know, I always thought the Mayans had it right. The Mayans were led into battle by their generals, and they didn't go into battle lightly. The generals didn't sit back in the tent. Yeah, I mean, I think it's horrible, and especially not having a draft. They just keep sending these career men and women. It's unconscionable that we send people to fight in the Middle East 4 and 5 times. They're eventually going to get hurt or killed.
Well, and messed up in other ways, too. That takes
terrible
drain on your
heart
and soul.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, the football commercials on Sunday look great for being all you can be, and then you come back, and the VA hospital is not all it can be all the time.
That's not where most people would want to end up. These people are true patriots, and that's what Meghan McCain was talking about, those who suffered and served and others who lived lives of privileges and rose to the highest levels of our government.
Right. I'm talking about remarkable Americans. CNN had their documentary, RBG, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, on last night. I don't know if you saw it. But
I did see part of it. And
she is a remarkable American.
I understand she can still bench press her weight, by the way.
Oh, she's, yeah, well, yeah, that's funny because she probably weighs about
80 pounds.
8 pounds.
80?
Yeah. Oh, no, she's something. She is really something.
Yeah. Well, what's your take on the state of journalism in America right now?
Well, it's great for the consumer. You have to look around sometimes. You can still go with the brand names, the big newspapers that have websites. Newspapers, not as much as they used to, but newspapers feed the news cycle. They do the heavy lifting. The broadcast and digital is picking the slack up now, but the New York Times and the Washington Post have been the ones who've kept the president and his people jumping.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about this mantra of fake news?
I think, like everything else the president does, it's hyped to the point that it's lost its meaning. I'm not sure who believes fake news. Fake news is not specific enough for me. Inaccurate news, that's always been around. Fake news is propaganda. And I'd say Mr. Trump's as guilty of that as anybody.
Well, Thomas Friedman of the New York Times, he gave a shot at some fake news the other day, and this is a fictitious story, but Friedman, who has a way with words, he says President Trump stopped his motorcade in Manhattan today, jumped out of his limousine, and shot a man on Fifth Avenue who was shouting anti-Trump epithets. The shooting was recorded by the White House press pool as well as by dozens of bystanders with cell phones and security cameras. When asked for his reaction, House Speaker Paul Ryan said, "We will need more information than is available at this point."
Right.
Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said through pursed lips that he was not going to comment on every up and down with this president. House Intelligence Committee Chair Devin Nunes said he had already had information indicating that the man whom Trump shot worked for the Clinton Foundation and may have been a relative of former Hillary Clinton aide Huma Abedin. Fox News did not cover Trump shooting at the top of the broadcast, which focused instead on the killing of an Iowa woman by an undocumented immigrant. Fox's only reference to the fact was that the president shot a man on Fifth Avenue, was that a New York City man died today when he ran right in front of a bullet fired by the president. White House spokeswoman Sarah Huckabee Sanders told reporters that she was looking the other day when the shooting happened, so she had looking the other way, so she had no comment, adding, "I haven't had a chance to discuss it with the president. I'll get back to you if I have something." But the president has stated many times that he could shoot someone on Fifth Avenue and get away with it. So he's just keeping a campaign promise. He did nothing wrong. There are no charges against him. And even though I have no comment and he has no comment, we've commented on this extensively. Hours later, though, the president tweeted, "Actually, some people are saying that a man who looked a lot like Barack Obama did the shooting. I'm not saying that. But some people are. It also could have been somebody sitting on their bed that weighs 400 pounds who fired that shot." Like Rudy said, truth is not truth unless I say so. That's from Tom Friedman. He says the biggest challenge in writing all of the above, worrying that readers wouldn't realize it was made up.
Yeah, listening to that, I was thinking it's harder. It's harder, way harder today to write satire. I mean, that's pretty close to the bone.
Yeah, but it's the world in which we live right now, and
the Farmer's Almanac sort of markets itself not writing about that kind of thing. It's very much Americana and what we now call hacks. Hacks meaning shortcuts to doing things. I didn't know what they were talking about when I first heard about hacks. But Farmer's Almanac still big on gardening, and they predict the weather with a secret formula that involves astrology. And I don't know. It's something to have in the bathroom, I guess.
A listener notes that this column by Friedman brought back memories of Art Buchwald. He used to appear in it was the afternoon paper.
He did, and Buchwald said, when Richard Nixon resigned, I needed Richard Nixon a lot more than he needed me. Buchwald, if you recall, Buchwald's columns were short. I mean, he just got into it. I interviewed him. A bunch of us met his airplane at Ryan Airport. He was coming here to talk to some group, and nobody knew who he was, because he was kind of near the end of his career. So I had a one-on-one interview with him at a pool table, and the rest of the press corps in Baton Rouge stood around and listened to us.
All right. Well, these are some of the events Ed Cullen's participating in. You can meet this fine gentleman if you've not already done so. C.S. Lewis, what about this?
C.S. Lewis St. Albans Church feeds about 200 LSU students every Wednesday during the semester at 11:30.
Tomorrow, right?
First one's tomorrow if you're an LSU student.
All right.
Show up.
LSU Book Barn?
LSU Book Barn collects, categorizes, prices books all year long, heading toward the sale November 24, 25, and 26, I think.
All right. And Rural Life Museum?
In January. Rural Life Museum Kitchen Garden, Kathleen McDonald is in charge there. I help her when I can.
Well, Ed, let's do this again soon. You're always fine.
Yep.
Thanks, everybody. Stay tuned.